This is the Commute Podcast, and we're brought to you by National Office Systems. Life is back to normal here in Savannah after an anxious week dealing with Hurricane Dorian. I'm Adam Van Brimmer, your host and editorial page editor of the Savannah Morning News and SavannahNow.com. The Commute is an extension of our daily opinion and editorial content, all of which is available at SavannahNow.com/opinion. On today's episode, we move past Dorian with some help from City Talk columnist Bill Dowers, who's here to talk about the long-awaited groundbreaking of the new arena, scheduled for this Friday, as well as the upcoming municipal elections. Also, the chair of the board of the Tybee Marine Science Center, Kathy Sackis, updates us on the progress made on the center's soon-to-be new home at Tybee's North Beach. But before all that, let's talk about the great office design services offered by the Commute's presenting sponsor, National Office Systems. Those of us who call Savannah home want to do business with as many Savannah businesses as possible. When it comes to your office space, National Office Systems is your trusted local resource. The Savannah company has been providing beautiful, functional, and comfortable workplaces for going on 35 years. National Office Systems is an exclusive local provider of Dirt Modular Interiors and Herman Miller Office Furniture. Learn more at natoffsys.com. That's natoffsys.com. I've been waiting on this thing for 20-some years, and I think on Friday is when it is scheduled for them to turn some dirt, obviously in advance of an election. I'm sure that might have something to do with it, but they have got their plans down, and they're ready to go ahead and really start making some efforts on the site. Is it like it is with me? It's you know, just a long time coming.
Well, it's definitely been a long time coming, and I don't know whether, you know, sort of the timetable for construction and everything is sort of reasonable or not. Mm-hmm. It is interesting, and it definitely seems like, you know, the upcoming election is playing a role. I don't know who is necessarily helped, though, politically by the groundbreaking. Van Johnson, who's running for mayor, has been a longtime advocate of the arena project and probably is more responsible than any other single person for it remaining on
the chosen West Side site. Yeah.
Eddie DeLoach, incumbent mayor running for re-election, I mean, he in 2016 tried to get the project moved elsewhere, and Alderman Johnson and West Savannah residents. And when I say West Savannah, there is a specific neighborhood called West Savannah. When I say West Savannah right now, I'm talking more broadly about all those connected West Side neighborhoods.
Right.
Those residents showed up in force to make sure the arena stayed there. So, you know, even though DeLoach is clearly a supporter and backer of the project now, mm-hmm. And I think we've hit a point of no return on the project. I mean, it's moving forward. I mean, he definitely could still be viewed with some suspicion, even by the people who support it. You know, it's interesting, though, and I don't know what you're seeing, but I mean, I feel like opposition to Savannah building an arena at all and building one on that site has never been greater.
Seems that way.
And yet this project has been going on for 15 years. It's been through SPLOST twice. As I just said, Mayor DeLoach tried to essentially, you know, like totally upend the course of the decision-making, you know, in 2016. Mayor Jackson tried to change it in 2013. You know, and now it's so curious to talk to members of the public who are acting like this all just happened.
Right.
And why were they so ill-informed? And I don't have a good answer for that. And I know they're frustrated that these decisions have been made, but these decisions were made years ago and very publicly. I feel like I've written about the arena like 1,000 times.
Yeah.
And not everybody needs to read my column, but it's not like I'm the only person who's been covering it.
Yeah, I first toured that site in the year 2000. I can tell you, I know it's been at least 19 years that has been the site that somebody in the city government has said that's where that thing needs to go. It's been there since 2000.
Yeah, I believe they bought some of the first land for it in the mid to late 90s.
Yeah.
It's not like this is a new sudden decision. Mm-hmm. I've heard all the criticisms and I get them all. I understand why people don't like it. At the end of the day, though, our current arena, I think it's an embarrassment for a variety of reasons. I'm mm-hmm. thrilled that it's going to come down. Mm-hmm. I'm thrilled that we're going to recreate the street grid where we can in that part of downtown. Mm-hmm. And I think this site on the west side is excellent. It's expensive and it's going to continue to be expensive. And people, of course, just lately are particularly upset about the rent being paid for the parking lot. And
sure.
It does seem like a lot, $700,000 a year. I guess it was sort of politically impossible to go ahead and round up the money through bonds or whatever for a huge parking garage, which would probably go immediately north of the arena.
Right.
And just construct that at the same time, that probably in the long run would make a lot more sense. But that parking lot, that can hold a lot of cars. That should be able to hold the entire capacity of it won't hold every car for a full event by any means. But many events at that arena wouldn't even need any more parking than that 20 plus acre parking lot.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that the point of no return, because to me, that's almost what this groundbreaking really is, the final pin, the final nail. We've heard 204, we've heard Farm Street, we've heard Savannah River Landing or whatever they're calling it now, the East Side Wharf or Eastern Wharf, probably.
Eastern Wharf, yeah.
Eastern Wharf. And it's always come back to right here on the west side. But until they actually turn the dirt, you don't really believe it. And I think maybe that's what snuck up on people. And then obviously the development of the canal district around it, the discussion around that is also kind of turning up some interest and some talk about it as well.
Well, and I think what's important for people to keep in mind about the discussions regarding the canal district, We didn't vote for a canal district in the previous special purpose local option sales tax votes. Mm-hmm. All we need for that arena is the arena parking, and we need to improve access.
Right.
West Gwinnett Street's already being improved. There are some relatively straightforward ways you could get some decent bicycle and pedestrian access from the downtown area. Mm-hmm. It's very close to downtown, keep in mind, mm-hmm. way closer than I think a lot of people realize. We don't need to build out an entire canal district in the next 2 years.
Right.
And,
yes.
The city owns a lot of property over there. And if we can spur really any kind of development or any kind of uses that encourage economic activity, improve quality of life, and maybe get some of those currently tax-exempt properties back on the rolls. At the same time, we get the entire Civic Center property back on the tax rolls. Mm-hmm. The economics of the project aren't nearly as draining as I think a lot of people see them.
Yeah, as it's being portrayed by some people as well.
Excuse me?
As it's being portrayed by some people as well.
Oh, absolutely. And I don't, I think some of those people have either just decided to ignore or just don't know about, some of the financial upsides. Mm-hmm. The fact is cities make big investments in themselves from time to time and do ambitious projects. And I hope people who have even resisted the arena at least get engaged to try to make the whole project as good as possible if it's happening anyway. I mean, if they want to continue to protest it and, complain about it and sit on the sidelines, certainly they have every right to do that. But I mean, I'm interested in seeing it done well. And I have always thought it was a good site.
Yeah.
But we'll see.
We'll see. So we mentioned the election earlier. Let's. I don't think we've had a discussion since qualifying ended. I don't know that we had a whole lot of surprises. I was somewhat surprised that nobody else stepped up to run for the seat that Nick Fulombo was running for. But everything else, I think, kind of went as we expected, at least in the city of Savannah. What we've got a couple of weeks, I think, before we start to get some debates and some forums and start to see the candidates really kind of hash it out. But is there anything in particular you're looking at as those events start that we should keep an eye on?
Well, I would love to see some discussion at those forums of hurricane planning and evacuations, mm-hmm. And how those should be handled, and how local leaders should be communicating with state officials. I would like to see just in general more robust policy discussion. Right. I fear that, you know, we'll just end up with another sort of personality and identity based election.
Yeah. Especially with the crime rate going up now again, right? So that all of a sudden becomes an issue again.
Yeah. And you know that it's really interesting. I mean, we're in a really high crime city. And you know, I mean, it seems that we made some strides on crime. It seems like now we have slipped back some. I'm not really hearing, ironically, except from anyone besides Nick Fulombo, is specific policy proposals that the next city council can foist upon the city staff and law enforcement, you know, and or additional funding, whatever it takes, right? What are the steps and what are we going to push for? And I'm just not hearing much discussion of policy. And you know, some of the candidates who are kind of the challengers on the outside, looking in. I mean, I think if and when any of those people get elected, I think they're going to face some really hard choices. I think they're going to realize that some of the things the city has been doing haven't been nearly as bad as they have portrayed them. And once you're on the inside trying to balance budgets and respond to neighborhood needs, politics can look really different. I'm disappointed, though, that there aren't more people running in pretty much all the races. And I wish there was something I was especially excited to kind of look for. There will be a lot of questions about the Canal District, I assume, at these forums and the plans for that. And the problem there is, of course, since, you know, Van Johnson and Eddie DeLoach largely agree at this point on the Canal District and the arena as a point of policy, I'm not sure how much we'll learn from questions about that. Renetta Lanier is running for Van Johnson's seat, District 1. She does have a challenger, though she is a longtime community resident. And I think if she were elected, she would probably work really hard to make sure that the West Savannah neighborhoods benefit as much as possible from any development of the Canal District. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, the downtown race, District 2, Dietrich Leggett, Bill Durrance, they faced each other 4 years ago. I will be curious to hear Leggett's sort of platform and what his arguments are. I haven't seen much, though, from really any of the candidates in terms of detailed policy and what they would do differently than the current incumbent, if the incumbent is running.
Yeah, and that's going to be of probably greatest interest with the two at-large seats, right? We got Carol Bell is running for her seat again, but she has a challenger with Keisha Gibson Carter, and it looks like that race might get kind of heated, because I don't know if you've seen Keisha's campaign signs, but they look like a real estate sign with something across the top that says not for sale. So it makes you wonder what she's insinuating there, and that race could get kind of ugly. And then, of course, the other race is Alicia Blakely and Tony Center. Familiar names around town, but two people that that maybe the public needs to kind of familiarize themselves with in terms of who they're going to vote for in this race?
And I do think there will be a lot of people. I think a lot of voters are actually in play for those two races, and I think a lot of voters are waiting to hear, what these candidates have to say about specific issues, and even just to see how they sort of conduct themselves at the forums and debates upcoming. Clearly, Keisha Gibson Carter, she's staking out the position, and I think this is a real issue, and I think it is a potentially winning political issue. But the current city council has repeatedly seemingly done just about everything they can to facilitate investment from large scale developers. Mm-hmm. Right. And we could make an argument like, well, they should be doing that. That's what they ought to be doing. But at the same time, they've also repeatedly allowed projects that many of us think are out of scale. Right. They have made financing and bonding deals that at least raise a few eyebrows, even for people who support them. If this sort of, we're selling Savannah to the highest bidder argument takes hold, mm-hmm. That's something, Carol Bell will have to respond to, I think. I think that's a tough one.
And that might be a way for Regina Thomas in too, right? That's her way in.
She could pick up some votes of discontented former DeLoach supporters, mm-hmm. Which would be really bad news for him. She could certainly pick up some votes in the African American community, where she has been. She's well known and, been an active member for decades. She certainly could have an impact on the general election. Given the widespread support and the backing of so many sort of established figures in the Savannah community, I have a hard time seeing her even getting close to a runoff. Right. I do think that some of the people who are some of the Van Johnson supporters who are concerned that she might play a spoiler role, I think that's possible that she mm-hmm. might play a spoiler role push things into a runoff, which many people think DeLoach would have the advantage in. Just for turnout.
Just in terms of turnout numbers, yeah. Well, Bill, thank you very much for coming on and talking us through some things. And I know that you've got me thinking a little bit harder about things, and I'm sure the listeners are too, but it's always good to visit with you.
Well, I don't know if I want everybody thinking too hard, but anyway, thanks, Adam. Always appreciate it, and appreciate what you do.
We'll move on to the Tybee Marine Science Center update after a word about Freedom Boat Club. With Freedom, you buy a membership, not a boat. Freedom members have access to more than 24 boats, from party barge pontoons to inshore fishing skiffs, and all of them are decked out with the latest gadgetry. Best of all, Freedom members don't have to worry about storing, maintaining, cleaning, or insuring those boats. That's all part of the package. If this is your idea of the boating lifestyle, contact Steve Sherman, 912-226-2617, or visit freedomboatclub.com and complete the information request form. Mention this podcast and receive a free hat and t-shirt combo. Again, that phone number is 912-226-2617, and the website is freedomboatclub.com. Freedom Boat Club, get on the water today. Joining me now on the commute is Kathy Sackis, who is I believe, Kathy, you're the chairman of the board for the Tybee Marine Science Center. Is that right?
Yes, the chair, yes.
For those of you who have been to Tybee lately, and you've been to North Beach, you've seen a building coming out of the parking lot at North Beach, and that building is the new Tybee Marine Science Center, which I think a lot of us have been enjoying for many, many years at its location down on South Beach, but the new facility broke ground in February of this year. It is scheduled to open up March of next year. Kathy, can you kind of update us on the progress of the building, and is it starting to get kind of excited about it?
Well, we've been excited right from the very beginning.
Yeah, I imagine.
But now it's got the beautiful upswept roof on the most beachside part of the new center. So that's starting to look like the drawing now.
Sure.
So if you look at the center, the new center, it's actually almost like three different buildings that are kind of pieced together.
Okay.
And the outermost building, or not the outermost, but the beach side most building, mm-hmm. has this kind of almost looks to me like a pagoda roof. And, okay. It's really makes it architecturally interesting and very eye pleasing.
Good. Good. And all three are being done together, right? So in March of next year, yes. when you throw the doors open on this thing, it's good to go.
It's good to go. Yes.
What can people expect out of the new center that they're not getting from the old center?
Well, with the old center had size issues. So, you know,
yes.
we were in the old, it was originally the police station, and then it became the lifeguard station. And we still have the lifeguards in part of the building, or at least on the outside of the building. And so we very quickly ran into, not quickly, but over the decades, have run into space issues. So, you know, we have a lot of people coming to Tybee, and of course they want the educational experience for their children. A lot of families come to Tybee, but we also have lots of Girl Scouts and Boy Scouts. And now we're starting, this month is beginning our school programs. So there's a lot of activity. Well, if you were just the general public and wanted to come in, sometimes you had to wait, because there's a fire code that
right.
allows only so many people to come in at a time, right? So sometimes on certain days we would have lines, long lines waiting to come in. So with the new building at the north end, we don't expect that. We expect to be able to accommodate everybody that wants to come and visit us. So it's a good problem to have.
Yes.
But we hope to remedy that.
Yeah, be better and more welcoming. So there's got to be some synergy on that end of the island too, right? Because you have the lighthouse, you have some, it's right there at Old Fort Screven. So there's a lot more educational tint on that end of the island. Do you get that sense?
Yes, and that was one of the reasons that we chose that area for the new center. Literally, we're calling it the education hub because not only do we have the lighthouse and Fort Screven, but now we've got the center, which is right in line with those three or those other two facilities.
Mm-hmm.
But we also have Fort Pulaski, which creates the fourth. Yeah, so that's it really concentrates people, and it also makes it easier for the buses to make the rounds, too, if they don't have to go all the way down to the south end.
Yeah, I can imagine that south end parking lot is, especially on the weekend, if you're coming to the center, it's probably a bit of a nightmare.
It can be, yes.
So I know the $4 million that the building is costing was you guys have got that, but I know you're raising a little bit of extra money to try to outfit the place. I think the number I saw before was $1.2 million, and I think you've already made some progress on that. What have you gotten in line so far?
We have. So just to give you a little background on how the money shapes out, $3.5 million is being taken care of by the city of Tybee Island. The mayor, Jason Buettlerman, and the city council voted a couple of years ago to make shoring up the dune system and creating this new marine science center on the north end. They're two top priorities, and they have lived up to their word. And so the building is being paid for by the city of Tybee Island, and that's $3.5 million. What we were not expecting, but very, very pleasantly grateful, were two different families stepped up to donate the land. And the first was the Fleetwood family, the Fleetwood Insurance family. And they donated approximately $1.8 million worth of land, eternally grateful for their donation. And then another family, the Makel family, stepped up and donated a much smaller parcel, but an integral parcel of to connect to the Fleetwood's donation. So all of that created the nice property. So then that left about about 1.5 million that we needed to raise for exhibits. And so that's to populate the inside. Well, IKEA came up and said, well, we'll donate all of the furniture that you need. Well, there happened to be quite a bit of furniture that we need because we're going to have offices and labs and classrooms and, you know, all of that kind of items that you need to populate a well-appointed center. So we're very grateful to IKEA for doing that. So now that leaves about still 1.2 million to raise for the exhibits. And my board of trustees, I said, okay, before we go into the community and start asking for, you know, just other donations, we need to step up to the plate and donate ourselves. Mm-hmm. Well, bless them. we have just in our 8 trustees, we've raised over $100,000 just from our trustees. Now that's huge. And that's 100% participation from my trustees. In addition, we have advisors, and these are people that are non-voting members on our board, but they're advisors. They've stepped up to the plate and have contributed as well. So I've lost track of where we are now, but I'm thinking it's probably about 150,000 just from those individuals. Now we're reaching out to the public, and we're doing kind of what is not silent, but behind the scenes fundraising. Mm-hmm. And so this behind the scenes is going to targeted individuals whom we think will, you know, donate anywhere from 5,000 all the way up to 125,000. Wow. And we've had success in that area. So we're, and these people will have naming rights. So for instance, I, you know, me and my family, we decided that we wanted to support have our name on the North Atlantic right whale exhibit. Mm-hmm. So we donated the appropriate amount for that privilege. And mm-hmm. so there's plenty of more opportunities. And so if anybody wants, I mean, this is a really unusual opportunity, right? When you think about it, how often do you have the opportunity to put your name on something?
Yeah. Get in on the ground floor, huh? Well, Kathy, good talking to you, and best of luck on the rest of the project. And we look forward to checking in before your grand opening.
Oh, thank you so much, Adam. I really appreciate you all.
For those interested in donating to the Tybee Marine Science Center, email Kathy at Kathy Jo Sakas. That's CathyJoSakas. Again, Kathy Jo Sakas. CathyJoSakas @gmail.com. Thanks again to Kathy and to City Talk columnist Bill Doris for joining the commute as guests today. Also, a big thank you to our sponsors, National Office Systems and Freedom Boat Club. They help make this podcast possible, and we encourage you, the listeners, to support them. Listen to new and archived episodes of The Commute at savannahnow.com/podcasts or by searching The Commute with that Savannah Opinion on your favorite podcast app. For more engaging local news and opinion content, subscribe to the Savannah Morning News. A digital subscription is an incredible value. It's free for the first month and just $7.99 a month for a year after that. Take advantage of this special offer by visiting savannahnow.com/digital-only offer. That's savannahnow.com/digital-only offer. The commute returns on Wednesday.